Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. All right, here we go, friends. It is primary night in Colorado. For my money, it is the most consequential election night of any variety in this state since 2010. We know that Coloradans will all but choose the next governor tonight, first open field in that race in 8 years. Coloradans in Denver will decide whether to send a socialist to Congress for the first time. Democrats will also pick their fighter in one of America's toughest battleground congressional districts. It is not too late to vote. It is 6 o'clock in the Mountain West. If you still have a ballot sitting on your counter, fill it out. Just skip the races that you don't feel strongly about and get it to a ballot drop box. It has to be there by 7 p.m. sharp to count, but it is not too late to vote. As of this afternoon, a quarter of Colorado's 4 million registered voters had cast a primary ballot. Democrats are all about it this year, right? And that makes sense. There's a competitive race for governor. There are two key House races. Democrats are outpacing their returns for the last two primaries. Unaffiliated voters who can vote in either party primary, Democrat or Republican, have overwhelmingly gone D so far by a margin of 2-1. And those returns from unaffiliated voters, the majority of Coloradans, could make or break several close races. The Democratic nominee for governor is expected to easily win come November. So tonight, primary voters decide between Senator Michael Bennet and Attorney General Phil Weiser. We should say, Republicans have not put up a competitive contender for governor in a decade in this state. They've only elected one in the last half century. So the winner of tonight's Democratic primary is all but certain to be the man to replace outgoing term-limited Democratic Governor Jared Polis. After 3 decades in office, Democratic Congresswoman Diana DeGette faces the fight of her political life. Democratic Socialist Melot Kyros has gained national attention after a wave of victories for Democratic Socialist candidates across the country. But she has also faced harsh criticism from some Jewish Democrats in Colorado for her comments on Israel and the conflict in Gaza. The biggest race in Colorado come November in the general election will be in the swing 8th Congressional District. Democrats decide tonight between centrist former state rep Shannon Byrd and formerly progressive state rep Manny Rutenell, who abandoned a series of his leftist viewpoints in order to run in the swing district currently held by Republican Gabe Evans. Before we get into a deeper dive of the primary races ahead of the polls closing at 7 o'clock with results to shortly follow, let's take a moment to discuss the state of wildfires in this state. There are hundreds of firefighters working in remote corners of Colorado right now, fighting wildfires that started in the last few days and then exploded over square miles. The Aspen Acres fire, southwest of Pueblo, is riding the Custer and Pueblo County line. It's burned more than 150 buildings, including more than 50 homes. We understand that a firefighter has been hurt down there. We're not sure how badly. That fire is now at more than 28,000 acres, about 43 square miles. It is burning uncontained. The Willow Fire, west of Leadville, is also uncontained. It's now at about 3 square miles, 1,900 acres. Lake County says more than 100 firefighters are out on that fire that has all of Leadville under a pre-evacuation warning, a be-ready-to-go alert. The big monster is the Snyder Fire. That's on the Colorado-Utah state line. It is one of the largest fires in our state and burning uncontained as well. It is now about 50 square miles, 30,000 acres. More than 130 firefighters are working on that fire as they simultaneously mourn their colleagues killed on those fire lines. 3 firefighters died. 2 others were injured in a burnover on Saturday. Those firefighters were not originally from Colorado. They came to our state to protect lives and property. Meteorologist Jaden Knowles is along now. And obviously, Jaden, we've been watching the winds, we've been watching temperatures, and a futile hope for some kind of rain on a fire somewhere.
You know, luckily enough, we did see a couple of isolated showers, mainly south down towards that Aspen Acres fire. So here's the map that shows all the wildfires that's continuing, multiple across the state, especially in the neighboring states. So yeah, that air quality is terrible. That's actually the worst, the top 10 in the entire world for the worst air quality alerts out there. So here's your smoke forecast. forecast, it's going to ramp up as we head into this evening. If you have respiratory issues like myself, definitely limit your time outdoors, especially if you have any plans this evening, or just stay inside and just relax with that. But current wind gusts, we have seen the windy conditions, especially up towards the airport. There was multiple delays because of these windy conditions, and we're also tracking some showers out there. But for the most part, red flag warnings will continue till 9 p.m. Wouldn't surprise me if they extend that into the next day, but later on in the show, we'll talk about those rain chances and also the impacts to the airport later on in the show. Kyle? All right.
Jaden, thank you. Final political ad of 9 News this primary season has already aired, and we'll get our first drop of results shortly after 7 p.m. That will be all of the ballots that came in prior to today. So that is going to be a large, large chunk of the results that we get shortly after 7 p.m. Our continuing coverage will stay on KTVD and wherever you stream. Our team's out covering the candidates and the campaigns tonight. We'll start with our Marshall Zellinger, who joins us from Michael Bennett's event. He's in the Golden Triangle area of Denver. And Marshall, Bennett's team was hoping for and long expected a much less exciting primary night than they are probably in for.
Sure, and I've talked with people close to the Bennett camp who are going to gauge tonight's mood based on the initial results that drop, as you mentioned, at 7 p.m. based on people who have voted prior to yesterday. If it's 5 points or more in Bennett's favor, it's still going to be a bit of a nail-biter here, but they're going to be feeling pretty good. If it's less than 5 points, get your sleeping bags ready. And if Weiser is in the lead when the first results drop, this place may be as busy later tonight as it is right now. Bennett started the race as the well-known established candidate, which was a benefit until it wasn't, when national sentiment about current politicos soured. There isn't much that separates Bennett and Weiser from each other policy-wise, but what about from the current administration? Kyle had a chance to ask Bennett if he's just Polis 2.0, and Bennett disagreed.
The reason that I'm running for governor is that Colorado is the third most expensive state in America to live. Our kids and grandkids don't believe that they're going to be able to afford to live here. And I think if we keep doing the same thing we've been doing for the last 20 years, our kids aren't going to be able to afford to live here.
I know it doesn't look that impressive at the party right now. It's still early. People just getting off work. People don't want to come until the results come out. But I can guarantee you, Kyle, there will be a few dozen people who are almost contractually required to be here in case they want to be U.S. Senator should Bennett win and Governor Bennett appoints the next U.S. Senator to replace him.
Yeah, it's almost going to be like that scene at the wedding, you know, where he throws the bouquet over his head, you know, and somebody catches it and they become a U.S. Senator.
And we know it's probably Congressman Joe Neguse, unless he wants to have some butterfingers and drop the bouquet, and then there'll be a mad scramble for it after that.
All right, Marshall Zellinger, the start of a long night for that man, but it will be an interesting one. We are blessed to have interesting races in Colorado this year, votes that matter. Marshall, thank you. Our Jennifer Meckles is at the Weiser camp tonight. And Jenny, just as I was talking about with Marshall, where the Bennett folks might have thought that they were going to have a cakewalk 6 to 9 months ago, the Weiser team finds itself in a race that has gotten tighter and tighter and tighter, which from their perspective is welcome news. The question is just, has enough time elapsed for Weiser to catch Bennett?
Yeah, and we'll see tonight. You know, Marshall talking about the party not picking up there yet. It's loud enough now, forgive the big obnoxious headphones, but the party's going, the drinks are flowing, and people here are, they're really hoping they get to celebrate tonight. Weiser has been all over the state today. As folks said, he started the day down in Pueblo, where he has started every campaign. Then he was in the Springs at an evacuation center for those fires that are burning in our state right now. And then he's going to finish here in Denver. I'm at Ace Eat Serve in Uptown, where Kyle, I'm told the second he arrives, he's going to play some ping pong. So I think people are in a little bit of an upbeat mood here tonight. But, you know, we talk a lot about how if Weiser is this anti-establishment, if Bennett represents the establishment, but these two don't have that much daylight on policy difference, like how do they distance themselves from each other? Weiser may not be a Washington guy, but he's been serving as attorney general for the better part of the last decade. He's both touting his experience, saying he could be this great governor. At the same time, he's trying to put some distance between himself and the guy who's been serving in Washington for a while. So it's kind of an interesting thing. And I know they've been both really trying to pull in perhaps more apathetic voters or confused voters, maybe not progressive enough for you. Maybe the two aren't so similar. How do you draw them in? And just yesterday, he answered a question from you, Kyle, asking, also, are either of you guys all that different from Jared Polis? You've already heard Bennett's answer. Here's Weiser's answer to that same question.
And I would lead in a way different from Jared Polis. We need to make sure our government is working creatively for people, listening to people. And a lot of people feel like your government is distant. You're not listening to me. When the Durango Herald endorsed me, the one major newspaper to endorse in this race, they said Phil Weiser has crisscrossed all 64 counties in Colorado, building meaningful relationships along the way. I've been doing this work in a meaningful, bottoms-up way, serving Colorado, fighting so people can afford to live in their communities, taking on how we protect our land, air, and water, protecting public safety, and so much more. We need a proven fighter, a proven builder as an ex-governor. The best result, and you've talked about this, Phil Weiser for governor, Michael Bennett for Senate.
That bumper sticker messaging he's been trying to say is, hey, if you're undecided between either of us, pick me, Weiser, for governor, leave Bennett in the Senate. But I know he's also tried to walk this fine line between, well, if Bennett's not good enough for governor, is he actually good enough to stay in the Senate? But Kyle, you know, trying to walk that messaging where maybe you could have both, or if you're trying to differentiate between the other, turning it into like essentially a bumper sticker logo. I laughed though tonight because when they were doing mic checks to make sure all the tech in here was going to work tonight, that's what they were yelling over the mic checks. Bennett for Senate, Weiser for governor.
Well,
sounds like the mics are working.
They think they've got a banger with that one, Jenny, right? They've been deploying that one constantly, right? And Phil Weiser, every time he says that, right, he knows he's kind of needling Michael Bennett, because Michael Bennett has been in the Senate for a long time. He's clearly very frustrated there, doesn't think it's an effective institution. That's why he wants to come home and be governor. So every time Weiser says Weiser for governor, Bennett for Senate, I feel like Bennett's about to respond like, up yours, buddy, right? Like, I hate this job. I want out of here. But Weiser deploys it like a compliment.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of like a compliment, but like, just in case you're confused, everyone, here's an option I could present to you that everybody sort of wins, in his mind.
Yeah. Well, a lot more interesting than we thought this race was going to be a couple months ago. Jenny Meckles is on it for us tonight. Thank you, Jenny. When we return, we will dive into the race that has captured national attention. Is Colorado about to send a socialist to Congress? Next. Most election nights around here, we don't even mention Colorado's first congressional district. That is the safest Democratic seat in the state. It is the congressional district representing Denver. And for the last 29 years, 15 terms, it has been represented by Congresswoman Diana DeGette. She has been safely ensconced in that safest of safe seats. Well, guess what? This year, she has got a heck of a challenge on her hands. She faces two challengers, primarily this woman, Democratic Socialist Milot Caro. She is 29 years old. She was in diapers when DeGette was first elected to represent the seat. Kiros grew up in Aurora, and she went on to graduate law school, got fired from a law firm a year into her gig for writing an essay critical of Israel, came home to enroll in a PhD program, work as a barista, and run for Congress as a Democratic Socialist. She would be the first ever elected to Colorado, from Colorado to Congress. There's a third candidate in the race. It's CU Regent and cannabis entrepreneur Wanda James. James's campaign has struggled to get any traction whatsoever in this race, but in a race that could be so tight between DeGette and Kiros, her presence in the race could make all the difference. Our Spencer Soischer is at the Kiros Watch Party in Denver. And Spencer, there is a lot of national leftist energy around this race because they want to parlay wins for the far left in New York City to prove a point and make history in Denver tonight.
And there's a lot of that energy in this room here too, Kyle. You can tell that people in Kiros' camp feel pretty confident in the direction that this is going. They like the direction that this is going. This particular party just opened, 15 minutes ago? And election results obviously not out for at least 45 minutes, but it's starting to fill up, and this place, we're in a spot off of Broadway, is about to pop. They've got a DJ set up here. I've got both headphones in with the noise cancellation function in. The bar is going. This is a particularly young room that is energized about a candidate that is on the ballot tonight for a candidate that establishment Democrats are watching closely, including for her "Don't Let the Door Hit You on the Way Out" message to one of Colorado's largest employers, Palantir, and others she'd like to see leave too.
I was excited to see them leave.
Are there any other companies with a significant presence in the Denver metro area that you would similarly like to see go? There's certainly other. There are defense contractors and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Lockheed, Suncor, multiple.
Lockheed Martin's a significant employer in the Denver metro area. Mm-hmm. I think almost 15,000 people, you'd like to see them go?
I sincerely believe that companies that profit off of war are not companies that we should seek to promote and grow.
Mela Quiros was not born yet when Diana DeGette took office. DeGette has not had a primary or general election challenger come within 35 points of her in Quiros' lifetime. She's hoping to change that tonight.
Yeah, I'll say this, Spencer. A couple of things jump out for people who are just now kind of seeing Mela Quiros and getting a sense of her style, right? When you hear her talk, a couple of things become apparent quickly, right? She's very intelligent. She's very eloquent. She is very dogmatic in her democratic socialist views. Like, you'll even hear New York City Mayor Zoran Mamdani kind of smooth out around the edges, kind of pick his battles on this or that. She is full bore on everything that democratic socialism is today.
Yeah, and I mean, look behind me right now. Democratic Socialists of America. You've got people wearing DSA shirts. Kyle, I point out, this room is very young. Like, for an election night party, you tend to have people who have lived in an area for a while, super passionate about their area, maybe with a bit more experience. I've only seen one political candidate from any office that I've recognized thus far. Otherwise, it's people under 30, under 40, who are energized about this particular candidate who they think has a shot tonight.
Yeah, I mean, you talk to folks near Quiros and they'll tell you that their opportunity to win is if they can change the electorate. Every candidate thinks that they're going to do it. All kinds of candidates want to do it. If she's able to do it, then she will make history in Denver tonight. Spencer Soischer, thank you. When we return, meteorologist Jaden Knowles will be back with a look at the weather forecast for the rest of the week, and we'll look to Colorado's 8th congressional district, northern suburbs, up to Weld County. Meteorologist Jaden Knowles is back around, and for folks who wanted to get out of town, not interested in hanging out for politics tonight, what was the airport situation?
You know, they had a ground stop around 5:15 this afternoon. Now, I was texting Chris Bianchi, senior meteorologist Chris Bianchi, and his flight had to get diverted up to Cheyenne just because we've been tracking these gusty conditions and also the isolated showers. One of the main reasons we've been tracking gusty conditions is because strongest storms over towards the eastern plains, and we're sending some outflow boundaries that uptick some storm activity. So at a time, we had to watch for some land spouts, but luckily we did not see that. Now we're just seeing heavy downpours of rain, luckily staying below severe weather limits, and then especially up towards the north. Greeley got in on the action with some heavy downpours of rain, as well as Raymer and Fort Morgan currently. So that's some good news because, boy, oh boy, we need the moisture. We already know that we need the moisture. And luckily, we did see a couple of isolated showers just southwest of Pueblo. Remember, that's where that Aspen Acres fire is. So hopefully, this isolated shower activity can kind of help firefighters fight these ongoing fires that we have across the state. Current wind gusts right now, still pretty gusty out there. 35-mile-per-hour wind gusts just reported over towards Akron. And we even saw one up towards 51 miles per hour over towards the airport just about 20 minutes ago. So, of course, the polls closed at 7 p.m. Temperatures are going to be on the warmer side, the upper 70s. And guess what? For your 4th of July weekend, staying hot, the 90s is what's in my forecast. Hopefully you're not doing any of that, the firework activity, because we don't need it. But just enjoy the heat, 90s, for the rest of the 7 day.
All right, Jaden, thank you. When we get back, we turn our attention to one of America's most hotly contested congressional districts. It's here in Colorado, and Democrats have a choice to make that could make it more or less competitive. Next. Welcome back in. Our continuing election night coverage will roll on at 6:30. Next will be an hour long tonight, and then we will roll on from there. 7 o'clock is when the polls close. We will begin to see results, so we will have continuous coverage on KTVD and 9 News streaming everywhere that you stream. Let's talk about the Democratic primary tonight in Colorado's 8th Congressional District, which is the district that was just drawn 4 years ago in an attempt to maximize Latino representation in our state. Our Angeline McCall is on that race tonight. And Angeline, first, Democrat Yadira Caraveo represented that seat, then Republican Gabe Evans, both of Latino heritage. And that has become an issue in this race, whether a district, which is 40% Latino, should have a Latino person representing it.
Yeah, certainly that has been a talking point for one representative and a criticism of the other former state rep, both gunning for this seat. This is a race we have been watching closely for the last few years. In the last general election in 2024, it was decided by less than 2,500 votes. Of course, Democrats look at that. That seat currently held by incumbent and Republican Gabe Evans. They believe he's vulnerable, and they believe that this is a seat to flip. And the golden ticket here is really winning the Latino vote. 40% of residents here in this district are Latino or Hispanic. But let's talk about these Democratic challengers first, starting with Shannon Byrd. If she wins tonight, she could be the first person to hold this seat who is not Latino. And we know this is something that she has been criticized for during her time as a state rep formerly, along with two votes on immigration bills where she sided with Republicans, particularly on a bill that would have further limited cooperation with ICE. And her opponent, Manny Rutenell, current state rep, has consistently brought up that record. He's faced his own criticisms, though, or on his positions, or rather lack thereof, and how progressive he actually is. We've seen him flip on key issues like a ban on fracking, animal rights, and canceling student debt. He has positioned himself as the one Hispanic candidate in this Democratic primary, but we also know that his main talking point, and this could prove really important to land with voters in this district tonight, so he needs their support and really their presence to advance.
I have already represented Latino families as a state representative, and it was a joy. I've loved all of my constituents, and now, since I have been in this race, making constituent outreach has been a core priority for me.
We need to make sure that we put up the best person and someone who understands the cultures, the struggles, the dreams of the people of this district. I'm the son of a single mom who immigrated to America in search of that American dream. We worked hard every single day for this country.
It'll be interesting when we start to see results, Kyle, on how people voted, right? Are they going to vote with someone maybe they speak the same language of, or they look like, or are they going to vote with someone different who has a more moderate point of view in politics based on their voting record? And certainly whoever moves forward will face Gabe Evans. And we know that he has really sided with Trump, which, you know, some people say could really be a disadvantage, particularly with low approval ratings on the president right now. Kyle.
Well, and Angelina, as you've talked about often in your reporting over the years, right, Colorado's Latino and Hispanic communities are not a monolith, right? They include folks of all sorts of political persuasions and viewpoints and so forth. But I know that one concern for candidates is always, how do you make sure that every community, including that community, turns out in primaries where not a lot of people vote?
Yeah, this is a million-dollar question that clerks all over the state and people really try to elevate this community to vote. And there is research that's done by the ACLU that just about 44% of Latino or Hispanic voters across the state turn out in primary elections, specifically back in the 2018 primary when they released these results. So when you talk about that, that's low voter turnout, and that means that, you know, it's even harder to get this Latino vote, especially on a primary. But this is a very hotly contested election, so maybe we'll see those numbers at that level or even higher this year, Kyle.
All right, Angelina McCall, thank you. Usually this time of night on Next, I'm reading people's angry messages about how terrible I am, but this is a special program tonight. So instead, we roll on with our hour-long Next primary night coverage on channels 9 and 20. Next. It's been 12 years since Colorado Republicans were last competitive in a race for governor. And frankly, there is no sign that this year is going to break that streak for them. It's a three-way primary tonight. State Senator Barb Kirkmeyer is the best-known name in the race. She's a traditional conservative, not necessarily a centrist, but not MAGA either. She's running on her expertise on the state budget and her years of legislating from the minority at the state capitol. Her campaign has struggled to raise money or gain traction. There's also MAGA pastor Scott Bottoms from Colorado Springs, who's known as a no-compromises far-right figure at the Capitol. He also has a challenging relationship with the truth, making a number of claims that he either cannot support with evidence or has had to walk back entirely, like his claims of a secret pedophile ring buying and selling children at the state capitol, or a 50,000-man Venezuelan army hiding in rural Colorado. The frontrunner in the Republican race for governor is Colorado Springs ministry leader Victor Marks, who describes himself as a high-risk humanitarian. This is my visit to his compound in Black Forest. He claims that he goes all over the world rescuing women and children from abuse and captivity. He has struggled to provide any evidence of those claims. And in fact, his two primary rivals say he is nothing but a grifter and a con man. So with that scene set, we turn to our Mark Salinger, who is at the watch party for the front runner, Victor Marks. And this is a long shot of long shots, Mark, as Colorado Republicans have only elected one governor, Bill Owens, in the last 55 years.
Yeah, Kyle, and Victor Marks tonight is trying to become the second in 55 years. I want to set the scene a little bit for you here. We are in Larkspur, Colorado, at a venue here with several hundred people. A lot of energy here for the Victor Marks campaign. The event started with the Pledge of Allegiance, and then there was a prayer. The prayer said, the minister said, that Victor Marks had been called by God to run for governor, and that really encapsulates much of what the Victor Marks campaign has been. He sees this as an assignment from God to be governor. So as you said, Kyle, Marks calls himself a high-risk minister going around the world rescuing women and children. That's gotten a lot of national attention, especially the interview that you did with him. But when you start digging into the numbers, digging into the specifics, that's where the numbers keep changing. And his own opponents in this race, Barb Kirkmeyer in particular, as well as Scott Bottoms, have been questioning that. Take a look at this exchange from the debate earlier this year.
Mr. Bottoms, you have described Mr. Marks as a con man.
Yeah, I stand by that. I also said he was corrupt, and I also said he lies, and he lied to me personally quite a few times. And so I stand by that. I can't put somebody like that any more than I can put a Democrat into the governor's seat.
And Mr. Marks, your response?
You're mean. You know, this is the same rhetoric as someone who's desperate, who's already lost. And the things that he says, I can just say this, accusations without evidence is nothing more than gossip or a lie.
But the reason I have said that I will not support Mr. Marks is because, one, I mean, he is unqualified, but that's not really the reason. It's because he's unfit. By his own words, he has said he's unfit. He talks about homicidal and suicidal tendencies. Makes me a little worried about, you know, being in rooms with him, that quite frankly, he's a fraud. He makes up.
This campaign is called Incredible Stories. We push back.
You heard Kirkmeyer there saying that if Marks is the Republican nominee for governor, she will not support him. Scott Bottoms has said the same thing. Victor Marks waves that all off, saying that it's desperation from candidates who know that they're going to lose. But Kyle, tonight, if Victor Marks is the Republican nominee for governor here in Colorado, he will be at the top of a ticket that his own Republican opponents call a con man and a fraud. We'll see what happens here in Larkspur tonight.
Yeah, it was going to be tough sledding before that, and we'll see what happens. Mark Salinger, thank you. So the top of the Republican primary ballot belongs to Scott Bottoms because he won at the state assembly. He claims to be the front runner in this race, a status that appears to be determined by metrics he won't share and some social media polls. Bottoms has made a series of fantastical claims, like this idea that the Venezuelan gang Tren de Aragua, which has an estimated 2,000 to 5,000 members worldwide, according to the U.S. government, has placed up to 50,000 people in rural Colorado. And he's claimed that legislators at the state capitol are trafficking children. Like, legislators at the capitol are doing this. Bottoms has yet to offer proof of either claim.
Representative Bottoms, how are you? Kyle Clark, 9 News. You are alleging that there are pedophiles buying and selling children for sex, elected officials in this building who are pedophiles.
Yes.
And you have said that you will reveal this information if Colorado elects you governor. If you're trying
I
to protect kids,
that.
You actually did. We'll play it here.
We are going to drop the boom. The moment that I'm governor, we've actually been talking about maybe doing it before, but the moment I'm governor, we're going to shut down the pedophile rings that are in the House, in the Senate, and in the governor's office.
For all of those big claims, he has not been able to do any kind of big fundraising this race that would allow him to be competitive in a traditional sense. He trails both other candidates in fundraising. Our Steve Steger joins us tonight from Barb Kirkmeyer's camp in Brighton. And Steve, Barb Kirkmeyer is arguably the most qualified candidate for governor that Colorado Republicans have put up in two decades. And yet she doesn't seem to get any traction.
Yeah, Kyle, it has been an interesting race, and Barb Kirkmeyer will tell you it's an interesting race. We are actually in Hudson, in her old stomping grounds here in Weld County, where she was a county commissioner for not too long. Barb Kirkmeyer said to want to make this kind of a quaint gathering for her supporters here at Ben's Brick Oven Pizza. It's the first pizza joint that I've ever seen that's connected to a dentist's office here in Hudson. But it's a very quaint gathering, great pizza. People just starting to gather here in a smaller kind of room off the side of the main Pizza Hall. Barb Kirkmeyer, like you said, could potentially be the more qualified or the most qualified candidate the Republicans in Colorado have run on paper, probably since Bill Owens, who was the last elected Republican Colorado governor and the only one in 55 years, like you mentioned. She's leaning on all of that experience at the state capitol. It's interesting. You look around here, you see faces from the Colorado State Capitol, from the Republican Party, who are here at her party tonight, here at her gathering tonight. To celebrate with her or potentially console her if things go the other direction. But she's really leaning on that experience from governing, brought it up during the debate when Victor Marks talked about how long and complicated the budget bill was.
I opened up the long bill the other day and started looking at it and thought, pretty complicated.
Not for me.
Is that an apology?
No, or? I said not oh. for me. What has happened over the course of the last 4 years that I've been on the Joint Budget Committee is the governor comes in with a budget request that is not balanced, and then I have to sit there and fight with Democrats for about 6 months to get it into line, and we have to determine where our priorities are. And they like to go off and spend money on things that we shouldn't be spending money on, basically, that are not core functions of government.
So I asked Barb Kirkmeyer tonight, just as she came in, what happens if you don't win? What happens if Victor Marks, and frankly, she had some very strong words about the race that she's run, about that scene at the debate, about kind of the Colorado Republican Party looking like the national laughingstock across the country, the national news picking up on that debate, and her looking like the normal person in the room, the fact that she's embraced a lot of the memes. I asked her, what happens if you don't win tonight? She says, dark days for the Colorado Republican Party, Kyle.
Yeah, some would say they've been in dark days for a while, but I guess dark can always get darker. Steve Steger, thank you. Back with a look at two consequential decisions out of the Supreme Court today and their impacts in Colorado. The Supreme Court wrapped up its term today, dropping final opinions on some of the country's most debated issues, including birthright citizenship and transgender athletes. Our Jaleesa Arizeri breaks down both rulings and what they mean for Coloradans.
On their last day of their term, U.S. Supreme Court justices knocked down a policy President Trump tried to implement on his first, limiting birthright citizenship. Trump had issued an executive order on day one of his second term, challenging the idea that anyone born on U.S. soil is automatically a citizen. Today, in a 6-3 decision, SCOTUS struck down that order, saying it violates the 14th Amendment of the Constitution that offers equal protections to all Americans.
So if it had gone the other way, it would have affected thousands, tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of people across the country.
Chris Jackson is a constitutional law attorney in Colorado. He says, had the outcome been different, there would be a lot of questions of how it'd be enforced.
Then courts might have had to look into questions about whether or not the person's parents, you know, I think the phrase is, made this nation their permanent home. That's a kind of very detailed, fact-specific inquiry that could be very hard to accomplish in practice.
And in another 6-3 decision today, the Supreme Court upheld state laws banning transgender athletes from girls and women's sports. In the opinion, Justice Brett Kavanaugh wrote, the states did not violate the Equal Protection Clause by using biological sex as a requirement for female teams.
And that is what Initiative 109 does.
Jax Gonzalez is the political director at One Colorado. They say this ruling does not really directly impact Coloradans right now, but an initiative on the November ballot will. 109 would require students to compete on school sports teams based on sex assigned at birth, covering school sports from K through 12 and college.
This K through college ban puts the same expectations on a kindergartner as it does on a varsity athlete. And we need to make sure that Colorado continues to stick with our values, fairness, and right to be able to access spaces regardless of who you are.
I was Jaleesa Arizeri reporting. So it's important to note the Colorado High School Activities Association, CHASA, has already agreed not to sanction certain schools and teams over their policies on transgender students. This is part of a settlement between the association and a group of school districts in a lawsuit. When our election coverage rolls on, we'll turn to the race for attorney general in Colorado. There was a day when Republicans were competitive statewide in that race, even as their power waned. That day has passed, so all eyes are on the Democratic AG primary tonight. As Democratic Attorney General Phil Weiser attempts to ride his anti-Trump track record all the way to the governor's mansion, voters will be tasked to picking his replacement, the next attorney general. It is a crowded race on the Democratic side that's expected to be an easy pickup for the frontrunner, Secretary of State Jenna Griswold. So despite the fact that she's an attorney, Griswold has no traditional legal or courtroom experience. Her campaign has falsely claimed that she argued before the Supreme Court. She did not. Her time as Secretary of State has been riddled with a series of public embarrassing errors, including posting passwords to voting machines online, then not telling the public or county clerks, sending voter registration reminders to non-citizens who cannot vote. She did that twice. Griswold's team also told Coloradans that they had voted, only for them to, or they had not voted, only for them to find out from their county clerks that their votes had counted. But the fact is, she faces three challengers, making it extremely likely she'll take the Democratic nomination tonight on fundraising and name ID alone. She's ducked debates and forums throughout the race and declined to take questions from 9 News. She faces three challengers, all who have extensive legal experience, but without her political heft. On the left, you have David Seligman. He's a workers' rights attorney. On the right, you have Boulder County District Attorney Michael Dougherty, who has prosecuted a series of high-profile criminal cases in Boulder, including the case of the King Super shooter. And the fourth candidate in the race is a former federal prosecutor who worked in Colorado's U.S. Attorney's Office, Hedel Doshi, who worked in the Justice Department under President Biden. I apologize, we apparently don't have video of her.
Griswold qualified to be Attorney General?
No, not at this moment. And I say that for a couple reasons. First, for the reason you just highlighted and what you highlighted in your show previously, that she's never once handled a case in the state of Colorado. The Attorney General has an incredibly important responsibility of leading a large public law office. And lacking experience in each of those things, including the challenges with integrity, I think are incredibly concerning from my perspective.
I'm running for office and I'm running for this spot because I think that I have the best substantive qualifications. Does she meet the minimum constitutional standards? Of course she does, right? But that's not sufficient. That's not a reason to elect someone, in my humble opinion. I think that in this moment, the people of Colorado are faced with the question of hiring their lawyer for perhaps the greatest difficult legal landscape we've ever seen in modern history. You should pick the best, most qualified, most well-rounded leader and lawyer, and I think I'm that lawyer.
Look, I don't think, I wouldn't be running if I thought that Secretary Griswold had the right qualifications in the moment to take on this fight. But what I'll also tell you is, with respect, that's a question for Colorado's voters, right? It's a question that Secretary Griswold should be answering.
But she's not coming in, so I'm asking you.
Yeah, I mean, she's not coming in, which frankly, let me just say, is absurd, right? She's got like, you know, $1 million ad buy right now, like talking to people across Colorado about how she wants to stand up to Donald Trump. And with respect, how are you gonna stand up to Donald Trump if you're too scared to stand up to Kyle Clark?
The winner of tonight's Democratic primary in the race for AG is likely to face El Paso County's Republican District Attorney Michael Allen in November. He is the heavy favorite in a two-way GOP primary for Attorney General. Our continuing coverage rolls on. We're with you clear through 7 o'clock hour, 8 o'clock hour, 9 o'clock hour, 10 o'clock. We're staying until these races are decided. Next. It's an exciting day today for Tina Peters, President Donald Trump, and the man who brought them together, Governor Jared Polis. Tina Peters got to stop by the Oval Office today. The former Mesa County clerk and convicted felon got to hang out with her friend President Trump. The president posted about it in a Truth Social post. He falsely claimed that she came to the White House to thank him for getting out of prison. Of course, his pardon didn't get her out of prison. Perhaps you could attribute some of it to the pressure that he put on the Colorado's governor to turn her loose. But honestly, from our reporting, it sounds like Governor Polis turned her loose because he thought it was the right thing to do, that she was over-sentenced based on her free speech, in addition to the fact that she helped somebody bust into Colorado's election systems in order to share info with election deniers. But this is a moment that we long knew was coming from the time that Tina Peters got out of prison, that she would be reunited with President Trump. I was wrong. I thought that she'd get a medal when she went to the White House, but instead, it looked like she got a lunch instead.
Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News. Streaming live, same time, on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano, is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.